Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Well, history professor Lloyd Kramer is the new director of Carolina's program in the humanities and human values. And lots of us know it because it brings a series of weekend seminars that are very popular throughout the state and in Chapel Hill as well. But there are a number of other really great opportunities for lifelong learning that program provides, and Lloyd Kramer has agreed to come visit with us. First of all, congratulations on your additional and new job.
Thank you, DG. It's a great honor to be the faculty director of the program in the humanities and human values.
Well, you keep saying faculty director. You've had faculty directors and directors. Not every director has been. In fact, like our favorite, Wayne Pond, our station favorite, he was director.
That's right. The model of leadership of this program has changed a little bit because the founding director, Warren Nord, who many people in Chapel Hill remember and was a PhD in philosophy, was someone who taught regularly in the philosophy department, but he was not a full-time member of the faculty. Wayne Pond, another person with a PhD in the humanities, was the director, but he did not have an official faculty position. And my predecessor, Eve Duffy, was similar in that she was a PhD academic, but did not have a full-time faculty position. So the program in the humanities, which has been around since 1979, we're now in our 35th year, has changed the leadership model a little bit so that now there is a full-time faculty member as faculty director and an executive director who's Max Orr, who is also a historian. And he manages a lot of the day-to-day activities of this program. But the idea is to have a faculty person play a new leadership role.
So is the idea is that this becomes a project of the faculty I mean, it's always been that way, but it's been in even more that this is a faculty project.
I think that is probably the thinking behind the transition in the leadership model, because the leaders in the dean's office, the dean, the senior associate deans, recognize the great value of the program in the humanities as a bridge between the faculty and the citizens of North Carolina. And the advantage, I suppose, of having a full-time faculty member who's more embedded in a department is that it will strengthen the connections between the faculty and the program, which have always been strong. But this is sending a signal, I think, of how the College of Arts and Sciences at Chapel Hill values this program.
Well, you got it both. I mean, you're a popular participant or leader or speaker at prior programs. In fact, for many years, you've been in and out. This is something that you like to do. And then you're also former chairman of the history department. You've got all the scholarly credentials, but I think this is a great job, but why would you, with all the stuff that you've got and have done, why would you want to do this job?
Well, this is an opportunity to build on experiences and interests that I've had for a long time. As you said, I've presented at many of the seminars, and I should just say that the model of the program is that there are weekend events, seminars with a panel of three or four faculty talking about a particular issue. And it may be an issue having to do with the history of French culture, or it may have to do with musical performances and the history of opera, or it may deal with a theme like Shakespeare, and there may be a tie-in with an event at the Playmakers. So these are thematic seminars with faculty from different departments. And I have been honored to be a part of this since the second year I arrived in Chapel Hill, which was in the late 1980s. And I began by doing seminars on subjects like the bicentennial of the French Revolution, or the legacy of the Napoleonic era in France, or the meaning of Impressionism and post-Impressionism in French culture. And I loved this format because it gave me a chance to speak about issues I care about, but to interact with people who are lifelong learners, people who often are alumni of the university, but even more often are they've moved to Chapel Hill for various reasons, for professional reasons, and they are just curious about ideas. So I was drawn to this program because I believe it is a precious resource that the university has developed for encouraging conversations between faculty at UNC Chapel Hill and the wider community in which we live.
Well, what is the difference between teaching graduates and undergraduates and teaching people who are only coming not to get credentialed for anything but just want to come learn? And are older and more experienced, but not as focused, not ready to take a test on what you tell them, maybe not the same type motivation. What's the difference and what's more fun?
Well, I have to say I enjoy both kinds of classes, if I can use that term. I love working with undergraduates who are for the first time maybe hearing about some cultural problem or some historical debate or conflict. But it is true that there are often students in an undergraduate course who are there because they're trying to meet a requirement for graduation or because the class meets in an hour, they happen to have a free space in their schedule. And so often the challenge in a class like that is to introduce undergraduates to the excitement of learning and to the value of knowledge about history or literature or philosophy or whatever. But with lifelong learners, as I like to describe them, these are people who have chosen to come to this event. They are people that have a lot of life experience. They've had more personal relationships. They've had professional experiences. They know more about the conflicts and complexities of the human condition. And they bring a richness and perspective to these events so that when there are questions and conversations, they add enormously to whatever subject we're talking about. So I would say it's a different kind of dialogue with people who are there always because they want to be and not because it's a graduation requirement.
Well, focusing on the weekend seminars and your preparation as a faculty member, as a lecturer, a lot of what you are asked to talk about it's a topic that you've been interested in. It's not like you had to start fresh to make a preparation, but you do have to prepare differently, I guess, for the lifelong learners than you would for your lecture to a large class or to leading a discussion in a graduate seminar class.
That's definitely the case because when you're leading a class in a regular college course, it's part of an ongoing development of a theme and a set of readings and conversations that may last over 14 weeks. In this case, you have 1 hour to try to summarize a set of issues and problems. And it requires, I would say, an even more synthetic approach to the subject. And I think this is one of the great things about the program in the humanities. It pushes faculty away from the tendency to be so immersed in a particular research project that they lose sight of how to interpret and explain that project to a wider public. And instead of talking about their specific research, in the typical seminar, a faculty member is talking about a broader issue, like the history of World War I or the meaning of Southern literature or some subject like that, in which they draw on their particular expertise, but they have to open this particular expertise into a broader framework to show why it is significant in a broader way. And I personally get a great deal of pleasure out of doing that because I believe that the specific research that we as faculty do is extremely important. But I think the way we communicate that to people who are not specialists in this kind of scholarship is to broaden the framework and to convey the passion we feel for these issues in a language that's accessible to people who haven't spent their lifetime studying it.
Well, we're visiting with Dr. Lloyd Kramer, who has just taken over as the new faculty director of the Program in Humanities and Human Values. And we're going to talk some more about some of the great offerings that are available to people who live here in Chapel Hill, as well as those who are already coming from all over the state of North Carolina. He and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Professor Lloyd Kramer. He's the former chair of the History Department at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and is currently, and Lloyd, is it correct to say that you're brand new? You're brand new faculty director of the program?
I'm pretty brand new. I started July 1 in this new position.
Well, thanks for sharing some of the background and why it's so much why you were enticed to be a faculty presenter at one of the weekend at many of the weekend programs. Now you're in charge and you got to help frame programs. What's on your plate? And was this plate developed by this plate was developed by others? You're selling the plates. What excites you about the things that you see coming? Focusing first on the weekends. Tell us about those weekends.
Yes, it's true that although I began my appointment a couple of months ago, I was involved in some ways with the strategizing for the programs for this year, but most of this work was done by Max Orr, who is the current executive director of the Program of the Humanities and who was the interim director last year. And there are a number of themes that are being developed. There are we always have programs dealing in some ways with public issues in the state of North Carolina. And so, for example, we're doing programs this fall on one is called Talking Tar Heels, which is based on a book by a couple of authors over at NC State, Walt Wolfram and Jeffrey Reeser. And this is an example of how one of our seminars deals with the question of how do people describe their lives and what kind of languages do they use. And we're doing a couple of programs on the legacy of wars. One of our popular speakers, Gerhard Weinberg, is doing does programs often on World War II, and he's going to be speaking about aspects of World War II, especially with relation to Italy. And we have very popular programs on literature and history. And this fall, in particular, we're doing a program in November on Shakespeare and aspects of A Midsummer Night's Dream, which is in collaboration with a production at the Playmakers Theater, an example of the kind of literary seminars we do. And we often do programs on particular themes that are controversial or interesting to people in the state. In November, for example, we're doing a program on sports in American society. And looking at sports not just as a form of entertainment, but what sports tell us about the culture, the history, the values of a society. And then we're doing another program, and this is typical of many of our semester offerings, on elections, because this year, of course, is an election year. And this is a program I'm actually involved in with a couple of other colleagues. And we're going to talk about elections as they developed in ancient Rome, and what were elections like in the period during and after the American and French Revolution? What have elections been like in North Carolina going back to the early 20th century? And then more generally, how are elections changing in contemporary politics? So this is an example of having a political scientist, an ancient historian, a journalist, a modern historian, all bringing different perspectives to these kinds of specific issues.
Yeah, well, it's kind of interesting. I'm excited about that, and knowing that about your interest in, you know, in French history, and after our wonderful experiment in democracy that we're so proud of, we think the American way is just so great, and then the French come in and have a revolution, democratic revolution, they start chopping people's heads off. And it's sort of like this Arab ISIS revolution. They popular take over, the people take over, and there's really no democracy left. They all of a sudden there's a strong person chopping off heads. It's
that's an interesting problem, though. So how? But this is like, how do we get some perspective on these kinds of events and transitions? Fortunately, in North Carolina, for all the conflicts we seem to be having, I don't think the losers will get their heads chopped off. However, the stakes to people in these events are very high. And where does this whole tradition of elections come from? How is it changing? And how do we bring to bear the humanistic traditions and knowledge to understand our own
context?
What
are you going to say about that?
Well, I want to point out that my particular part of this program is to talk about how democratic were the elections and politics in this period, because both the American and French revolutions claimed to be launching a new kind of political system that represented the will of the people. And yet, in both cases, there was a great deal of anxiety about actually letting the people have very much power. And so, although elections came out of these revolutionary moments, for many decades, there were great limitations on who could participate and how wide-ranging those kinds of events would be. And I think the value of looking at something like that in historical perspective is to get some sense of what is similar in our own context to past elections and past conceptions of democracy and what is different. And how does the world always change and how does it stay the same? And that's an interesting problem, I think, that each of these seminars deals with. Let me just give one other example of collaborations. We're working closely with the North Carolina Museum of History, the North Carolina Museum of Art, and other cultural institutions in the state, and we're going to have a program in Raleigh on Dutch and Flemish art in the 16th and 17th century in conjunction with a new exhibition that's going to be running for several
months. So you'll not be this will be a little bit out of the usual in the sense that you will not be on the Carolina campus.
That's right. One of the initiatives we're trying to develop at the program is to be more engaged with communities beyond Chapel Hill. And so in the fall, for example, we're doing three seminars down in Wake County, one at the Burning Coal Theater, one at the North Carolina Museum of History. This is the Talking Tar Heel program, and another one on art and the history of art at the North Carolina Museum of Art. And we see these collaborations as part of our mission because we want to bring faculty and participants from Chapel Hill into the wider Triangle community.
Well, we're going to be talking some more about some of the specific programs, but for somebody who's pulling into their driveway now and got to go inside or getting to work, and how would you tell people to find out more? You've got a web. Is there a web page that we can go to?
The easiest way to get information about the program is to go to the website, which is simply humanities.unc.edu.
Well, pretty easy. Humanities.edu.
UNC.edu.
Well, it was easy until I started.
Humanities.unc.edu.
Right. Well, let's take a quick break. I'm visiting with Professor Lloyd Kramer, the director of the program in Humanities and Human Values, and we're talking about some of the great offerings that are available to us. He and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Professor Lloyd Kramer. He is the former chairman of the, longtime chairman of the History Department. And now, in addition to his teaching and research and mentoring responsibilities, is faculty director of the program in the humanities. And I say and human values, but you're emphasizing humanities. Now, that's you're trying to shorten it a little bit to...
Well, but the title is still officially the program in the humanities and human values, and this this carries the legacy of the founding father of the program, who was Maynard Adams, a very famous and well-known teacher in the philosophy department at UNC Chapel Hill. And Maynard believed that the humanities were not simply something for the ivory tower, but were a way for people to think about how to live their lives. And he believed that people needed to understand the role of values in what they do, not just knowledge, but the way values shape our behavior. And so that name, the program in the humanities and human values, goes back to the era of Maynard Adams in the late 1970s.
Well, it raises the question, Lloyd Kramer, about how you recruit in an age you're selling humanities in a time when humanities are not the emphasis of our, at least our undergraduate education, certainly not graduate education unless you're in one of the fields, but we're sort of, people are skeptical about paying too much attention, learning too much about it. We say whatever we learn, we forget. And then it doesn't really help us. How does it help me get a job with the bank or the hedge fund or lawyer? How does all of this work? Now, we have that problem, or that we have that challenge in undergraduate education in persuading young people that it's worth the investment. But how in the world do you persuade adults to come spend a lot of time talking about something that's not going to help them get a better job?
That's a really interesting question, because the whole question of why do people want to take the time to read literature, to understand history, to debate philosophy, is a question I think it's always been at the heart of American higher education, because we have a great emphasis in this society on practical outcomes. What can I do to earn a better living, to make more money, to be successful in the ways that our society defines success in terms of wealth or power or fame or influence in the society? And I think that the great challenge we have when we teach subjects in the humanities is to help people understand this isn't just a way to get a job, although people who write well and think clearly and analytically often do very well in the professional world. I remember our former chancellor, Holden Thorpe, saying he had gone to a meeting of the presidents of organizations under the age of 50. And I believe all but, there were 50 people there, and I believe he said 49 of them had been liberal arts majors in college. And he was talking about how leadership is often related to the ability to communicate, to have a vision, to articulate big issues. And I think this is something that we're helping undergraduates understand when we bring to them the story of history. And I'll just give one other example. I've been involved at UNC in the minor in the entrepreneurship program. And one of the things I've done on an annual basis is give a lecture on the history of failure in human experience. And this is because Buck Goldstein, who's the organizer of this, points out that all successful entrepreneurs begin by failing. And most young people who come to UNC, for example, have always been very successful. And so how do we learn that failure is part of a trajectory towards success? And the humanities are where that comes from. So, for example, in that course on entrepreneurship, I talk about great examples of failures, going back to antiquity and everything from the Peloponnesian War defeats of ancient Athenian armies down to the failures of Henry David Thoreau in his work, or the failures of Napoleon in the Russian campaign. Failure is part of life, and the humanities prepare you for your first job, how to write, how to think, how to succeed in communicating with other people. But even more importantly, I always argue that the humanities help you when you lose your first job. Because how are you going to get perspective on that? How are you going to redefine the meaning of your life if you assume that your definition of selfhood depends entirely on this job and you lose it? Where do you go for the resources, emotional, intellectual, psychological, to withstand those kinds of setbacks. And the humanities provide that perspective. So when a person then is, let's say, in their 40s or 50s or 60s, and they've had more life experience, it's a lot easier to convince them that a great work of literature that talks about the struggles of relationships or the portrait of a marriage or the setbacks in professional life, these are resources for a middle-aged person, even a retired person, to gain perspective on what they've been going through. And I find it's an easy sell that people are looking for ways to deepen and enrich their perspective on the experiences they've had.
Well, that's well said. I think you make, I mean, we ought to put you up on the platform in orientation to keep people from getting too quickly into a slot of courses that are simply preparatory for a profession or for some specific task. And that's fine, but not to miss this sermon that you've given us about the value of the humanities. But we're talking about humanities for adults, many of whom I don't want to say are at the end of their life, but they might be towards the end of their professional mm-hmm. career. And I went to up to Chautauqua for the first time this summer, and the Chautauqua experience was a lot like what you've been describing, in the sense that it's a week-long mm-hmm. Festival of ideas and different opinions, and all of that's great. Some of the substance I remember of it, but the real fulfilling part was to be in the company of a lot of other people who were equally interested mm-hmm. in this, and then hearing them react to the ideas presented from the platform. And I sort of feel like you provide North Carolinians a little mini Chautauqua experience.
Well, I like that analogy because I've always had a lot of respect for that Chautauqua tradition that goes back all the way to the 19th century. And I think this kind of conversation that you're talking about, where people take serious ideas, think about them, debate them, discuss them, and show that it's interesting and fun to do that. This is probably even more important now in our culture than it may have been in the 19th century, because we live in a culture of sound bites, of Twitter and, Facebook and cable TV, in which almost every presentation of ideas is extremely brief and decontextualized. So how, as a thinking human being, do I find a way to put this clutter and chatter into some kind of framework and perspective? How do I have a sustained conversation that goes for more than, a 20-second exchange? And this is what I think the program in the humanities and human values represents. It is an attempt to exemplify the enduring value of extended conversations, debates, and disagreements, even, about the issues that make us human. And those issues, of course, include the question of not only what we do with our lives, but how we approach our death, how we view the meaning of death as well as of life, the way in which we interpret that in art or literature, and find in the expressions of others something that speaks to us. Mm. And we live in a society in which there's such an emphasis on self-fulfillment or self-enrichment or self-development. And yet I think the program in the humanities and human values is one way of thinking about how the development of self always depends on an engagement with others, that the self never exists alone. And the way to get perspective on the self is to read about what others have said, to see the great art that others have produced, to listen to the music that people have used to try to convey their feelings. And our program is a way to help people of all ages move beyond the self to an engagement to the whole history of human experience, and then bring that back into the self going forward.
Well, you get swept away by that, Lloyd Kramer's excitement. And he's excited in part because he's taken on a new job after being chairman of the history department. He's the faculty director of the Program in Humanities and Human Values. And he's telling us about some of the reasons we ought to be interested. And after the break, we'll find out some of the specific opportunities for us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Lloyd Kramer. Lloyd Kramer is the former chair, longtime chair of the history department at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Has continues to teach widely respected throughout the world for his scholarship. Now is the faculty director of the Program in Humanities and Human Values. And we've been talking, Lloyd, about the weekend seminars where you bring people from all over the state for these really exciting, the best of our faculty and those who enjoy interacting with the public. But something that's still fairly new, and that is that for the Chapel Hill people, there's something extra that's available.
Yes, we have a number of other formats besides the weekend seminars, which often take a full day or part of Friday and part of Saturday. And among other things, we have a series of flyleaf books. One series is called Spotlight on Scholars, and which on Tuesday evenings throughout the month, there will be an individual scholar. Might be a literary person, it might be an anthropologist, it might be an archaeologist, speaking about their research and their own passion for a subject. And these are open to anyone who wants to come by. There's a very modest fee to attend. And then we have another series at the Flyleaf called Humanities in Action that deal with a particular theme. And for example, this fall, in October of 2014, we are having a series on economics, how to make sense of economics, and discussing with UNC faculty new approaches to economic knowledge. For example, a program on Thomas Piketty's controversial and influential book, Capital in the 21st Century.
This is, please forgive me for interrupting you about this, but this is the kind of thing that you must be really excited about as sort of a historian of ideas and how people, how the world's ideas about things change, mm-hmm. sometimes on the basis of kind of a popular book or something that dramatically comes in. And this book might be, you know, might be at least a mini, you know, a mini revolution. So you must be kind of excited about this particular discussion.
And this, again, is an example of what the Program in the Humanities tries to do, is takes an important book and think about what's new here, what's can be connected to other books and other interpretations, and helping people work their way through a contemporary debate.
I like this one because it sounds like the book is very hard to read. It's very important. Very hard to read. What I would like is for somebody to tell me what's important about it and talk about the ideas without having to plow through every
page.
Well,
in this case, we have an outstanding economist, Stanley Black, who's been at UNC for many years and is very articulate in talking about such issues. So you come to these kinds of events and you meet other people and you get a one-hour synopsis of a big problem and then have a chance for a discussion. I want to mention a couple of other things that we're doing. We're developing a collaboration with the DSI, Improv Comedy Center, which is now over on Franklin Street in Chapel Hill. And the people at DSI are very interested in working with us on programs. We're going to create a humanities lab. So like on Monday nights, people are going to do, we're still working out what this might mean, but sort of contemporary interpretations in a performative way about the humanities.
So perform, not just humor, but performance.
Or we could have humor or some kind of way
some
of
way,
exploring.
Oh, I'm excited. I'm sorry, but you got me really excited. I didn't know about this, and this is exciting. So, because some of my friends who are the smartest and have the most to offer do not know how to offer it. And so you're going to get the stand-up performing people to work with your people to enhance the experience of people
to do something, presenting something with the humanities, but in who knows what format or where it's improv and where it may go. We're also doing spelling bees on humanistic themes, also in collaboration with DSI. In other words, I talked about collaborating with the North Carolina Museum of Art or History. Now we're going to collaborate with DSI Improv Comedy, because the humanities, after all, are part of the are linked to humor and laughter, and the human condition includes laughter as well as sadness. So why not work with an improv comedy company?
This is very interesting to me. Scary, because what if I had to come. You know, what if I had the opportunity to come participate?
You'd be great. How about a stand-up routine?
No, I mean, that would be
North Carolina history.
Frightened to death. But I think of all of this, maybe this isn't where you're going, but I'm thinking about all your colleagues. And I'm thinking about people who come to your programs who just need to be unleashed and given confidence that they can stand up in front of an audience and not only spout out what needs to be spouted out, but do it in a way that engages their audience. And
bring in young people. This is part of our goal, because we want to be a program for people of all ages. And we also have a number of programs for teachers. And I want to stress, this is another component of what we're doing. We have special scholarships for teachers so that anyone who teaches in the schools in North Carolina can get a major scholarship to attend our programs. And this is also one of the ways in which we want the humanities to be part of the conversation in North Carolina, because we have great respect for the work that public school teachers do and people in other schools as well. And we want to make sure that the liberal arts, as we understand it at the university, remains a vital part of the curriculum and the teaching in the public schools, K through 12.
Well, this is exciting.
This is part of our program going forward also.
Well, thanks for visiting with us about your new job. We've just got a minute or two, and I'm always curious about what you're doing yourself in terms of your current scholarly interest, your thinking about from the context of your knowledge of the history of the ideas that move us. What are you thinking about? What are the ideas that are moving us in this complicated world right now? Are they coming from from Islam, coming from a new reassessment of the Russian Revolution, or is the French Revolution still at the top of your list of things that influence us? What are the currents that are moving us and guiding us?
Well, of course, the currents that are there never seem to go away. We've talked about some of these in other conversations we've had, including nationalism and religion and ethnic identities and the desire to shape the world in a way that conforms to one's own ideology or identity. My own work as a historian is always interested in the way that people use their identities to try to shape public policies and actions. And I see this happening within the United States. I think that there is an ever more assertive claim for the rightness of one's own ideological and religious or intellectual position, which coincides with a growing tolerance of diversity. I mean, I find this the fascinating thing happening in the whole world. I find the world is getting more and more interconnected and aware of difference and even tolerant of difference, and yet at the same time, strident claims of the value of difference or of the self-righteousness of one's own position. And that constant mediation between the need for tolerance and acceptance of diversity, the need to affirm and assert particular identities, that is the precise, complex interaction that seems to be going on everywhere from the Middle East to Russia to Ukraine to the political campaigns in North Carolina and the United States.
I'd like to come to your seminar on that topic. Lloyd Kramer, if you joined us late, has been visiting with us about his new job as faculty director of the program in the humanities and human values at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And Lloyd, thanks for sharing all of the ways that we can enrich our life during the next few months.
Thank you, DJ, and I hope to see you and many others at upcoming programs of the Program in the Humanities.
Thanks. If you will have information about how you can get more information about these programs, but Lloyd, one more time on this very simple, humanities.unc.edu.
EDU. That's the website.
On the web. Thanks to Lloyd, and thanks to all y'all for listening. This is DG Martin, who's talking, and I'll be back here before you know it.